My name is David Gottlieb. I became a chassid of the Boston Rebbe in 1962, Rav Levi Yitzchak Horowitz, and I'm presently a chassid of his son, Rav Naftali, of Boston, Massachusetts. Along the way, I was a professor of philosophy at Johns Hopkins University for 10 years, and now, for the last 31 years, I've been teaching at Yeshivas Or Sameach in Yerushalayim. It's a well-known Jewish idea that the Avos kept all the mitzvos, even though the Torah was not given. Many ask, if that's true, and it is true, how could Jacob marry two sisters? Doesn't the Torah prohibit marrying two sisters? And how could Moses' parents, Amram and Yocheved, be married, seeing that Yocheved was Amram's aunt? And that's also prohibited by the Torah. The Ramban explains that the Avos, when they volunteered to keep the Torah, did so only in the land of Israel. Outside the land of Israel, they did not undertake that voluntary commitment. So Jacob married the two sisters in Haran, outside the land of Israel. Moses' parents lived in Egypt, and therefore they could marry. The question for us is, why did the Avos, who volunteered to keep the Torah, set that restriction? What did they see that made it relevant to them to restrict their commitment only to the land of Israel and not outside? The answer to that question can be found in the second paragraph of the Shema. If you read the second paragraph of the Shema and categorize it, it falls into three sections. The first section says that if you keep the mitzvos, then things will go well. Rain at its appropriate time, fertility. The second section says, beware lest you go astray, and in particular serve other gods, the result of which will be a punishment of no rain and no productivity, ending in exile. The third section says, place these words upon your hearts, upon your souls, tie them on your arms, put them on your heads, tefillin. Teach them to your children, mezuzah, in order to lengthen your days and the days of your children on the land that Hashem has given you. So in categorical terms, the paragraph reads like ABA. First, if you do well, things will go well. Then, if you do ill, things will go ill. And then the third is a return to keep my various commandments so that you'll have length of days on the land. The obvious question is, why did the Torah split it up that way? Why not put all the good in one section and the bad in another section and have two sections rather than three? If you look at Rashi, quoting Chazal, when it says, starting the third section, place these words on your heart, on your soul, and keep these various commandments, Rashi quotes Chazal, who say, even when you go into exile, keep commandments, so that when you return, they should not be new. It shouldn't be chadashim, it shouldn't be new. Some people have the impression that Rashi's comment, quoting Chazal, is a matter of memory. If you don't keep them outside the land of Israel and the exile is extended, as it was in our case, 1800 years, 1900 years, they'll be forgotten. That's a mistake. Rashi says nothing about forgetting. And the Maharal, who explains Rashi in the Gur Aryeh, has an entirely different understanding of what that Chazal means. What Chazal is telling us is this. There's only one source of Torah and mitzvos, and that's Moshe Rabbeinu. No one prior to him and no one subsequent to him can be a source of Torah. So, for example, Maharal quotes Maimonides in his commentary in the Mishnah in Chulin. We do a bris milah, and we make a blessing, lachniso b'risa shel Avraham Avinu, to induct the child into the covenant of Avraham. Are we doing bris milah because of Avraham? Says the Rambam, no. We're doing bris milah because Moshe Rabbeinu commanded us in Parshas Tazria to do bris milah. Moshe Rabbeinu commanded us to induct the child into Avraham's covenant. Yes, it's Avraham's covenant, but we do it because Moshe Rabbeinu commanded it. Similarly, there can't be any later source of Torah and mitzvos. Now says the Maharal, here's what Chazal are communicating to us. Imagine that the Torah, we keep the mitzvos of the Torah only in the land of Israel. So when a Jew leaves the land of Israel, he then becomes obligated only in the mitzvos of the Bnei Noach, the non-Jewish mitzvos that apply to the mitzvot of the Torah that apply to the non-Jewish world. Imagine now that the entire Jewish people goes into exile, as in fact happened. Then the whole Jewish people functions as if they were just Noahites. When they come back, it would be a new start, a new application of the special mitzvahs of the Torah. Says the Maharal, that's impossible. There can't be a new start. The only way that we can be connected to the Torah and its mitzvahs is through Moshe Rabbeinu. The Torah is telling us in the second paragraph of the Shema that when you leave the land of Israel, keep mitzvahs of the Torah so that you'll be connected to Moshe Rabbeinu, so that when you come back, it won't be a new start. Lo yu chadoshos. They will not be new. This has a very profound implication. Why do you keep Shabbos in New York? Shabbos, not agricultural mitzvahs, which we know are tied to the land of Israel. Why do you keep Shabbos? Why do you teach Torah to your children? Why do you put on tefillin and write mezuzahs for your doorposts? Only because when you go back to the land of Israel, they shouldn't be new. The message here is that the Torah and its mitzvahs are designed for the land of Israel, period. Shabbos is designed for Yerushalayim, for Tzfas, for Tveria, for Beersheva, yes, even for Tel Aviv. And so is the teaching of Torah, and so are tefillin and mezuzahs. It's designed for the land of Israel. Only, there's a technical problem, if you don't keep them outside the land of Israel, then when you come back, it will be a new start, and there can't be any new starts. So the significance of Shabbos in New York is vastly different from the significance of Shabbos in Yerushalayim, or in Tzfas, or in Tveria. Shabbos in the land of Israel is what Shabbos was designed for. That's its purpose. Shabbos in New York is a necessary performance for the sake of continuity, so that when you come back, it won't be new. And that's its sole function. Is it binding? Yes. Is it deraisa? Yes. Would a person who violates Shabbos in New York carry all the penalties of violating it in Yerushalayim? Yes, but its function is different. Let me give you an analogy, which may be somewhat flippant, but maybe it makes the point. Someone's driving in a residential area at 3 a.m., and he's the only one on the road. And he runs a stop sign. Police come out from behind the bushes and they stop him and they give him a ticket. And the driver says, but officer, we know what a stop sign is for. A stop sign is to protect life and property. A stop sign is relevant at 10 a.m., not at 3 a.m. There's nobody on the street but me. So surely when I run the stop sign, I'm not violating the reason, the rationale, the purpose and value of the stop sign. What would the policeman say? You're right. You're right, stop signs are designed to protect life and property. But they do that by being objective 24 hours a day. You ran it at 3 a.m., you get a ticket. So he'll get a ticket because it's legally binding at 3 a.m., but the purpose is for 10 a.m., not for 3 a.m. Keeping Shabbos in New York is like running the stop sign or having a stop sign at 3 a.m. You have to do it, it's commanded, Kadosh Baruch Hu made it into a mitzvah, but that's not the purpose. The purpose is for the land of Israel. And this is what the Avos understood. The Avos understood that the purpose of the Torah is for living in the land of Israel. Like the Ramban says, it's like the laws of the king in the palace of the king. There are laws of the country that apply in the street. If you live in the palace of the king, there are special laws that apply there. The laws of the Torah above and beyond the laws of the non-Jewish world, our laws for the non-Jewish world, of course, those laws are like the laws of living in the palace of the king. And they said, we're going to volunteer to live the laws that the Kodesh Baruch Hu put down for living in his palace, for living in the land of Israel. The extension of those laws to Chutz La'aretz, where it's just a matter of continuity during a period of galus, of exile, that we're not volunteering for. Because they understood that, they made that gesture only in the land of Israel. This has a very, very important implication, which I've described already, but it's worth repeating. You're living a life of Torah. You want to live up to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. There are two levels. There's what he commanded, on the one hand, and there's the purpose of what he commanded, on the other hand. You live a life of Torah mitzvahs in New York, you are living what he commanded. He did command us to live up to all the mitzvahs in New York. But if you take into account the purpose of what he commanded, living a life of Torah in New York is second class. It's second class. My Rebbe Zatzal, the Boston Rebbe, stressed this over and over again. He said, if you'll ask a Jew in Flatbush, in Muncie, in Glen Hazel, Johannesburg, in Golders Green, London, ask him about his Jewish life. And he tells you, my Jewish life? It's wonderful. I have my yeshiva, I have my butcher, I have schools for my children, I have my congregation, I have my Rebbe, my teachers, galat kosher meat, Cholav Yisrael, 72 minutes after Shabbos, spoken as a chosid with those prejudices. It's perfect. I have everything that I need. And he has no krechts, no sigh, no pang that he's living outside the land of Israel. He's missing a crucial sensitivity. He's missing a crucial sensitivity that life outside the land of Israel is bide'evet. It may be necessary. It's a very complicated halachic question. Many gedolim lived outside the land of Israel. But it's still bide'evet. They had reasons why, in their cases, it was necessary to do. But if you ask any of them, all things being equal, do you belong outside or inside the land of Israel? Everyone agrees that all other things being equal, you belong inside the land of Israel. The Rebbe Zatzal traced it, this is a video that's relevant to Tisha B'Av. He traced it to the Chet of the Meraglim. Everyone knows that the spies triggered the ultimate vulnerability of the Jewish people to being exiled from the land of Israel. Where was the shorish? Where was the root of the failure? The Rebbe Zatzal said something, I find it absolutely unique and astounding. He said, the very decision to send the spies, decision made by the Jewish people as a whole, even Moshe Rabbeinu agreed, was a zilzul b'makom hashchina. It was failing to take account of the place of the Shechina. After all, sitting in the Midbar, the Shechina was with them. To send spies to leave the Shechina, to go into the land of Israel, which was not the Makom HaShechina at that time, was a zilzul, the Makom HaShechina was a failure of appreciation for being together with the Shechina, and that failure, abandoning the place of the Shechina, to go in and do a reconnaissance mission, however you explain it, like the Malbim or others, Malbim or the Ramban, whether it's military or evaluative, the zilzul of the Makom HaShechina created a weakness in our attachment to the Makom HaShechina, and that was the shorish, which ultimately led to the failure to appreciate the preciousness of the Makom HaShechina, and ended up in the exiles that took place thereafter. So, this was the message of the Rebbe Zatzal. He encouraged all of us to come and live in the land of Israel, even though that meant he lost support where he was. He lost people from his kehila. We remained attached to him. But in building a kehila, people naturally think of holding on to their adherents, to their chassidim. Not him, not the Rebbe Zatzal. Boston Rebbe pushed people to come to Eretz Israel, always with this concept that the land is a place where Chatchila, every Jew belongs. When Yaakov Avinu sees the sulam, the ladder, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu promises him that even though he's leaving the land of Israel, things will be well. And when he gets up in the morning, he makes a vow. One element in the vow is V'hoya Hashem li l'Elokim. Hashem will be my God. Rashi and the Ramban disagree as to whether that's part of the Tanai or part of what he's promising to do. The Ramban takes it as part of what he's promising to do. If you'll preserve me and protect me and give me food to eat and clothes to wear, food, not bread, and you bring me back in peace to this land, then Hashem will be my God. So the reader says, then? You're making your worship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu dependent upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu preserving you? And if he won't preserve you in these ways, you won't serve him? Says the Ramban, that this is part and parcel of the whole purpose, of the whole message of the dream. It means that the relationship you have with the HaKadosh Baruch Hu inside the land of Israel cannot be duplicated outside the land of Israel. That's why he saw the internal angels leaving him and external angels coming to accompany him, because the quality of relationship with the HaKadosh Baruch Hu changes drastically when you leave the land of Israel. And what the Ramban understands Yaakov Avinu is saying is, when I come back, I will work to reconstruct that relationship with you that can only be had in the land of Israel. And I lost that relationship, was replaced by another type of relationship. When I come back, I'll work to restore that relationship that can only be had with the HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the land of Israel. Bottom line is that every Jew needs to have a sensitivity to the specialness of Eretz Israel. Yes, to come and visit. Yes, to send your children to yeshiva here. That definitely appreciates that there's a special quality here. But also to, as they say, vote with your feet. And at whatever period of time in your life you have the ability to come and live here, you should come and live here. The Gemara talks about the mitzvah of being buried here. And one authority in the Gemara says, what a tragedy. Only dead? Only dead he came here? He didn't come here while he was alive? Again, we all know that there are halachic reasons why it's appropriate to stay outside the land of Israel. Many Gedolim did, but it's bide'evet. Sometimes you have to do a bide'evet. Sometimes you have no choice. But you have to be conscious that it's a bide'evet, and you have to do your best to make the best effort to come here and live here, and thereby fulfill the ultimate purpose that the Torah has for the Jewish people, which is to keep the Torah and the mitzvos in the land of Israel.